This is CICK News. Thanks for joining us. I'm your host, Dan Messick. Each week, we provide an update about events and issues developing right across Northwest BC. CICK News is made possible by the Government of Canada and the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the only organization mandated to financially supporting campus and community radio stations across Canada. CICK Smithers Community Radio is on the dial at 93.9 FM, or you can listen online at smithersradio.com, and we are broadcasting from the unceded Gitindam Territory, home of the Wet'suwet'en Nation.
Adina Young lives on Haida Gwaii in Old Masset Village on the north end of the island. I interrupted Adina as she was cleaning crab that she and her husband and children had caught the night before. If the name Adina Young sounds familiar, her work with the Haida Matriarchs as the spokesperson for the Anlai Gujalang, or Daughters of the River, could be where you've heard about her. Adina and I spoke last year when the Haida had declared a state of emergency on the waters of Haida Gwaii, a state of emergency that was not respected by the fishermen and women of Queen Charlotte Lodge. Or maybe it's her work as a counselor of the Old Masset Village Council, or even her artistic work as lead actress in the Haida language film, Skawe Kuna. Last month, she released that she was running for the Green Party of Canada for Skinabogli Valley, a riding that has remained NDP majority since 2004. I spoke with Adina Young on July 19th, just shortly after an announcement that the Green Party leader Anime Paul's leadership position could be suspended due to an alleged hostile work environment, and one day before the Federal Council would conduct a non-confidence vote. I wanted to ask Adina how she felt about using her goodwill and strong ethics to run federally for the Green Party, a fractured party, as well as running against a strong NDP-led riding for over 10 years. Let's listen to my conversation with Kunjara, Adina Young, candidate for the Green Party of Canada for Skinabogli Valley.
My English name is Adina Young. My Haida name is Kunjara. I belong to the Chaflanis Eagle Clan. My late grandmothers are Lafalkana and Jetkinja. My mother is Jennifer. Her Haida name is Kunau, and I'm a wife to a fisherman. We've been together for coming up to 19 years, and we have 4 children.
Excellent. And so why are you running for the Green Party of Canada?
I wanted to be involved with politics. I want to continue to be part of changes that are for the betterment of the people all around, and to be able to be part of something like the Truth and Reconciliation is one of my goals. I've always had I've been involved with politics locally here on Haida Gwaii for about 10 years. I started as a staff person with the Council of the Haida Nation and within the Heritage and Natural Resources Department. And I was in that position for 4 years. And I received a lot of information from knowledge keepers and the elected representatives for the nation and from the province. And I had to present all this information in a neutral manner because of the position that I had. And in 2016, I decided to run for Old Masset Village Council as a band council. And I was a successful candidate. I held 2 terms. The first term was 2 years, and the second term I got in through a by-election. I think I had a break about 5 months between the previous election. And within those 5 months, I also ran for school board trustee. I currently sit as a trustee for School District 50 Haida Gwaii. And I was able to get all this experience and all this participation within the governance structures, within CHN, within Old Masset Band Council, and as a school board. And I'm also school board trustee, and I'm also an appointed director on several societies within the community. And being in all those different places and seeing the conversations that need to be had and some of the barriers that are in the way, whether they're provincial regulations or federal legislation, I want to continue being involved and to be part of this. I think it's a pivotal time in politics in regard to truth and reconciliation and climate change. I wouldn't want anything more but to be in the House of Commons.
Bridging on that and the previous interview that we had last year with your work with the Daughters of the River, the Andale Gujalung, you're so busy. And I wonder what your thoughts are on holding a position in this larger platform. Does running for Green Party of Canada, does that in any way mean that you feel like you might have to step away from your more immediate roles that are especially serving the Haida Gwaii people?
I think so. I definitely think that I would have to step away, not necessarily turn away from everything, but I think stepping into a bigger role within the federal government will definitely take a lot more time out of the local work that I have been doing. But I don't think it's a bad thing, and I really feel like I've tried so many different things within the community that this is just a good time in switching gears and understanding what the needs are at a community level, but now expanding my horizon to see what else it looks like outside of the community. Because one of the Haida laws that we follow, that we're guided by, is everything depends on everything else. And there was a really good example during the pandemic when Haida Gwaii was shut down. During the time that I was a spokesperson for Andale Gujalung, as well as being an elected council member for Old Masset Village Council, we had conversations with some of the coastal First Nations, like where BC Ferries traveled to. And we also had conversations with the mayor in Prince Rupert. And we all agreed that we wanted to keep our communities safe from COVID. And, you know, we relied on each other. We created relationships and networks to be able to advocate to the province and say, no, this is, you know, we are communities who are worried for the physical health of our members and as our constituents, and we work together. So, you know, being able to depend on each other and work together to keep us safe as long as we did, and for things not to get as out of hand as it could have been, I think also sparked my interest to run in the federal government.
The NDP has held the riding for Skeena Bulkley Valley since 2004. And now, do you feel optimistic about the change in representation for the riding? And if so, why?
I do feel optimistic. If I didn't feel optimistic about anything that I ever did, I wouldn't have gotten anywhere. I was looking back just at the previous election, and we had 62% of the voting population came out to vote, and NDP got in with 41% of those votes. And the next highest number was the Conservatives with 33%, and the Green Party has you know, never had more than 3% until this last election where Mike Sawyer got 5% of the votes, which is the highest number ever within the Skeena Bulkley Valley. And I really looked at the NDP constitution and the Green Party constitution, and I really tried to, like, I really studied the two constitutions to see, you know, what's the difference, why, you know, really understanding the roles that each party plays and what the differences are. And I really feel like, you know, with truth and reconciliation being a conversation and movements happening slowly but surely with the federal government, I just felt like the Green Party is the place where truth and reconciliation conversations can happen, based on the experience that we have here on Haida Gwaii, that the blanket that the government puts on everybody never fits each community or each riding the way they think it does. And if I have a voice through the Green Party to say, hang on a minute, Skeena Bulkley Valley does not fit that. That does not fit who we are as a community. I have that opportunity with the Green Party to say that out loud and to be respected and to be supported and to have the space and the conversations that we need to have to navigate our way through how we can make things work with the federal government within our riding.
Now, Adina, the Green Party is it's sort of imploding right now with rumors of Anna May Paul potentially being ousted from replacement as party leader. What are your thoughts on running a campaign with a party that at this moment seems rather fractured? Do you think that will hurt your chances?
You know, the appearance of what the Green Party is and how it is, you know, being put out there, I don't think, you know, it's on a national level, but I feel like every, you know, just like every household, every relationship, you know, you will always have a bump in the road. And I don't think it's anything that will ever, you know, it's something that you can repair. It's always something that we could navigate through, and times will be tough, definitely. And these are, you know, these are things that we have to prepare for. And we don't get a full story through media releases. We don't get a full story through published articles. We don't get a full story from, you know, we get bits and pieces. And they are open for interpretation on however we want. And, you know, there's, like I was saying earlier, two sides to a coin. I could say, you know, play a devil's advocate and poke and prod and create a divide and conquer. We just need to sort of step out of the box and think in a different way on, you know, what is this really actually about?
So normally the NDP, again, which has held the riding for now, let's see, that's like 17 years. And the NDP has found strength in working with the Indigenous community, especially in this riding. Last year, they had a choice to elect Anita McPhee, and there was controversy in that decision. So now in a riding that's over 30% Indigenous, how do you feel about representing that population in the riding? Is there more weight on your shoulders, especially as an Indigenous woman? Do you find that that's more pressure for you?
I don't think it's more pressure. I think it's an opportunity for more empowerment. I did have, you know, I had the opportunity while I was on Old Massive Village Council to sit as a director on Coastal First Nations Great Bear Initiative. And I was there you know, when they started talking about the Fisheries Resources and Reconciliation Agreement, the Coastal First Nations and DFO, which is the first agreement with the DFO, you know, in regard to resource management with them. They've never, like, it's never been done anywhere else in the country. And we're the first to sign on to an agreement like that. And it is so very beginning stages of this. And to be part of that, I felt so much courage, maybe, if that's the word I want to use. I felt so much ambition to be able to work on an agreement like that, especially if it's the first ever, and to share everything that I had, everything that I have, all the knowledge, just everything that I could think of on what do they need to know that is going to help our community? What do they need to know that is going to help the Coastal First Nations? What do they need to know? And to be able to ask the hard questions, like, what does that mean? If we're going to decide on that, what does that mean for the government? What does that mean for our band council? What does that mean for our community members? Is this a long-term plan? Like, is this a long-term achievement that we're going to progress over time? Is it a short-term agreement where we're going to get a bunch of tangibles at the very beginning and then we're not going to see anything for a really long time after that? Like, just the ability to be able to ask all those questions and to make sure that we're going in a direction that is going to take us as far as we can go, as safely as we can, you know, just holistically looking at so many different ways, looking at what it means to, you know, be able to harvest at sustainable rates. What does it look, you know, what we know as we grow up within the community when we're harvesting for our families, that we only take what we need. We feel like we know how to, we've managed our natural resources for so long, and now the government is giving us permission to manage our resources, which are so scarce. And it's like, you know, we know our cultural ways, but how do we put it into legislation? How do we put it into policy for, you know, for everybody else to follow? Because now it's a matter of our cultural identity and our livelihoods compared to, you know, the commercial fishing industry now. Now we have the responsibility of somebody else's livelihood because of the commercial fishing industry, because of the fishing lodge industry. You know, those natural resources that sustained us once upon a time is almost gone, and now it's our responsibility. You know, they're giving us the responsibility again to be able to manage it.
You know, resource management, and you mentioned truth and reconciliation earlier on in the interview. Are these some of the main tenets of your kind of your platform as an individual running for the Green Party, or just kind of, you know, as kind of almost like a really, I guess, macro view of it? If someone is thinking of voting for Green Party and they see your name on the ballot, what is it that you stand for?
A priority of mine. I really feel like truth and reconciliation, the truth part needs to come from Indigenous community members. It needs to come from Indigenous people. Me being an Indigenous woman, feel like I can bring that truth. I can bring that truth to the House of Commons. I can make a good contribution to the reconciliation we can give definition of reconciliation in a thousand different ways, and we could talk about reconciliation until we're blue in the face, but we're not really going to get there until the truth comes in. And I can bring that truth. I can share that truth. And I feel a lot of emotion when I think about our truth. We had Haida singing and drumming at the Old Masset baseball field when the first announcement of the 215 children found in Kamloops, and we created space for some of the residential school survivors and some of the people who went to day schools even. And this sound is ingrained in my brain, and I hope it's not too loud, but I'm gonna put my phone down, and I'm gonna share with you the sound that I heard one of the speakers say. And she was loud, and I hope it's not too loud. She said, "I miss my mom. I miss my mom." And she's here today. She's here today as she was a reverend for our Anglican church. And we have so many people who are dealing with our truth in so many different ways. One of the older aunties that I talked with, she says her husband passed away a couple of years ago, and she sat there so strong. I didn't see one tear fall. And I went to go see her, and it was on Orange Shirt Day, the year before. We went to go see her on Orange Shirt Day, and she was talking to my younger daughter. And she says, "You know, I feel really sad today, but I have no more tears. I don't have any tears because I went to residential school and we weren't allowed to cry. If we cried, we got hurt. They scared all the tears out of me. I can't cry anymore." And she said, "I feel sad. I really do. But I can't cry." And I think these are all the truths that, there's so many stories out there. There's so many people who have something to say. And if I can take that with me to help with reconciliation, I'll do it 110%. And I don't want to sound biased. I don't want to use being an Indigenous woman as just a card to get in. You know, I've seen one, I'm following all these different social media threads, right? Because I have to keep following to see what exactly I'm getting into. And one comment I read was, "I hope this Adina lady realizes that just because she's Indigenous doesn't mean she's exempt from all the other issues that are going on within our country." And I was like, that's pretty fair, because, you know, in these days, in these times, this is what's in the spotlight are the Indian residential schools. And I recognize that, and I feel grief, and I feel sorrow, and I feel sadness. But on the other hand, I have nothing but gratitude, and I can't be anything but happy because we survived. because we have language, because we have culture. And then we spin around again, and I can't do anything except acknowledge the country of Canada and acknowledge the power that the government has, and to recognize how much power the government has, and to recognize and to acknowledge and to be respectful of all the people who are proud to be Canadian. Because at the end of the day, we're not going to measure each other's trauma to see who had it worse. We're all going to be here every day till our last day. If I could come in with my truth and with the acknowledgement and with the respect of what the Canadian government is, I feel like I can come in and make big changes. Yeah, with the truth and reconciliation, that's what I mean by I want that to be a priority, because I really feel like that is relationship building. That is opportunity for systemic changes. That's opportunity for us to be able to have conversations and, you know, climate action, the climate crisis that we're in, and knowing that Bill C-12 had just gotten royal assent last month, the Canadian government being accountable for, you know, reaching net zero by 2050, 2030. It really has to do with communication. It really has to do with relationship building. It really has to do with changing the status quo. So truth and reconciliation, climate action, and relationship building. Those are all the different things, you know, they all will contribute to systemic changes. I think one of the greatest achievements that I feel like I had at the earliest time within my election with Old Masset Village Council was when the federal government were going to have, you know, potential changes to the Pilotage Act. And we had the chair came to Prince Rupert and had engagement sessions or consultation sessions with the First Nations communities close to Prince Rupert. And it went on for 2 days. And at the end of the second day, I said, I appreciate your time. I said, but I do have a question. You've done your job. You are going to write a report and you're going to make some recommendations. You are accountable to your minister. And I said, we came here to help you do your job. And I said, I have to go back home and I have to write a travel report. And within my travel report, I'm going to say, I went to Prince Rupert. We had consultation for 2 days in regard to the Pilotage Act for some potential changes. This is what I said, these are the concerns that I raised, and this is what works for us. I don't know what that all means. I'm hoping it's going to be implemented into his recommendations or his report, but I don't know what happens after this because he's done his job now. And I said, so if I helped you, how are you going to help me be accountable to my community, because they put me in this position for this exact reason? And if I can't be held accountable to my community, I'm not doing my job. And I said, is there, like, are you able to show us your report or give us your report before you give it to the minister? Because I don't know if when you're done writing your report, you're even going to consider any of the concerns that we brought forward. And he said, you know what, Adina? He said, in the 40 plus years that I've been doing this kind of work for the Canadian government, I've never had anybody ever ask me that. And he said, I'm going to need a little bit of time. He said, because this was my last travel. This was my last trip. And then I was going to write my report and submit it. And he said, give me some time and I will see what I can do. And he called within, I think it was within 48 hours. He said, Adina, I received more funding. He said, you and the people who are at this engagement session can come down to Vancouver and I will present to you my final draft before I submit it to the minister to ensure that your guys' concerns and what works for you is implemented into my recommendations in my report. So that was the first big victory I felt like I had. And even though it was only one committee for one potential change, it's still something. It still shows that I have an ambition, that I have time to make those changes and to keep making those changes, to change the status quo, to ensure that we're creating spaces for ourselves to not only hold them accountable, but to hold ourselves accountable. Because if I can't hold myself accountable to the people who vote me in, why am I even trying?
Adina, I've kept you for far longer than I had said to you, but I just wanted to know, is there anything else that you want our listeners to know about you, about your candidacy, about your running, about HIDA, about the Green Party? Is there anything else that I didn't ask that you think is important for people to know?
But I did have a post that I created on Canada Day, if you want to hear it. I wrote, I can't help but feel the political heat this day on July 1st, 2021. Today, as an Indigenous woman from a HIDA matriarchal society, I sit in all my feelings. I sang our HIDA songs, I harvested berries, I sat with family and had conversations. I cried, I laughed, and I wore a traditional headband and an orange shirt. Tomorrow, as an Indigenous woman and everything I am after that, such as a registered Indian band member, constituent, citizen, and anything else I am in the colonial structure, I will keep on keeping on. Politics is not everybody's favorite, and I, on the other hand, will jump in at opportunity. I will speak and ask questions as an Indigenous woman, as a constituent, as a registered Indian under the Indian Act, and as a citizen. I will speak and ask questions because each label I have has a right. Each right has a responsibility. Each responsibility has a power. In recognition of the power that each label has, I offer to share with you my time and what I know. And I ask of you the same. For I recognize that we are now sharing space. I'm not only an Indigenous woman, I am all those other labels because I possess government-issued ID, like the BCID, birth registration, Indian registration, etc., etc. I am surviving my cultural identity while conducting openness and understanding as to why a hierarchy wanted to rid me. We are sharing space. I can advocate, share knowledge, listen with open ears, have a willingness to learn, and work to make informed decisions. We are sharing space. There is an abundance of truths untold, and abundance of laws and regulations from colonial or governance systems. We are sharing space. I was born in the midst of a transition from intergenerational trauma to generational healing. In my healing and survival of our two worlds, I hear you. We are sharing space. Respect and reciprocity. We don't know what we don't know. You are you and I am me. We are sharing space.
Thank you for reading that. Adina Young, thank you so much for giving us your time today, and good luck in your candidacy for the Skeena Bulkley Valley riding and the Green Party of Canada.
Thank you so much.
If you want to know more about Adina, she's an open book, and in her own words, she loves to talk. Reach out to her on Facebook at Adina Young, parentheses, Kun Jara. That's it for CICK News today. Catch you next week, where we're featuring festivals in northern British Columbia and other news affecting the North.
Thanks again for tuning in to CICK News. If you have any hot tips or news stories you think we should cover, contact us at CICKnews@smithersradio.com or follow us on Facebook at CICK News. You can also catch our fresh shows each week at SkeenaStrong.com or subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts. Thanks again to our producer, Pam Hassan, and all of our roving reporters. I'm Dan Messick. Thanks for listening.